All right, great to be here. And when I was praying about this morning, I was brought back to April of 2002, which was probably the first days of my coming back from doing MPD. I did MPD in 2002 when I went into full-time ministry. And I remember, I'm trying to recall where Pastor Steve and I were seated. And it was one of those first days on the job for me. And I remember asking him, Steve, where do I find everybody's 201 files? And then Steve looked at me and said, what are 201? What's a 201 file? And I thought, okay, that's the history of every... Are we going to get this right, or you want me to do a handheld? I said, that's the history of every employee. And... we're going to need that. We're going to need to know because at the time, I believe there were about 80 full-time staff. And as a rule of thumb, and Gigi, you can correct me on this, I think as a rule of thumb, when you have 40, 44 people, you're going to have a semblance of not really an HR department, but you're going to have some person who's attending to that already. And I remember... in that discussion, I was praying about this morning, I remembered Joel Belangdal. How many of you remember Joel Belangdal? And I remembered sitting down with him and talking about budgets and how, when will that ever happen and how will this... And now, 8 years after, we are where we are. It's fascinating. As I was praying this morning, I was actually walking in our village at about 5 in the morning and just praying, and I was looking at the sunrise and just believing God, and the Holy Spirit almost put in my heart, you've only just begun. And you can't even imagine the magnitude of how what this is going to look like years from now, which is why we're doing what we're doing. We're doing what we're doing because in many ways we cannot get to where we're going unless we do what we're doing. And if we think for 1 minute that we're going to get to where we're going using the same things we used 26 years ago, it's not going to happen. And so a lot of these, even the school and the training, this new format of how we're doing training is really in preparation for not this, but the future and the next people who will be taking over your jobs and my job. I cringe at the thought that I'm going to be 54 in the next 4 months. And the thought that I probably have another 30 years of real good, hard work inside of me, as long as I stay healthy. But after that, it's going to be over. And there's going to be people that are going to be running this. And my job is to make sure that I pave the way, prepare the way, and make sure that that next generation captures the essence or the issues or the values that we have kept over the years. I want to start this morning by playing a game with you. If you could form a circle, three circles of 10 each, just wherever you're seated now, just form a I think there's, we lack two, right? So two of those circles will just be 9. What? We lack one. So one will be 9, both of you will be circles of 10, and Mayette will distribute a box to each one of you. Can you just stand up right now? Okay, just form that... circles of 10 and 9. I would have opted for smaller circles, but it would have been too expensive. No, one big circle of 10. Okay, and get that box, and then appoint a leader. Don't open the box. Don't open the box. 10. 10 and 9. Okay, got it? Now appoint a leader, appoint a coordinator. Okay, cricket. Okay, who's adult? Okay, and then who's here? Okay, open the box and hand out one item to each person. Thank you. And now on a scale of 1 to 10, on a scale of 1 to 10, take a look at what you have. On a scale of 1 to 10, ask yourself how valuable this is to you. 10. Okay? The highest being 10, huh? Now, look at the other person's values and what they have. And then try to see in the next 3 minutes if you can trade your values with theirs, with what they have, if you want it. Okay? In other words, could you just do that? Just say the next 3 minutes. Gans, I'd take that if I were you. Is that yours? By the way, you can keep it. Yeah, it's yours, but you have to trade the next 3 minutes. You can go across the room, huh? You can go across the circle. You don't have to be just the person beside you. One more minute. Guys, you can trade. Mahina. Handheld. You can trade.
Hello.
You can trade. Okay? As long as the person you're trading with is open and willing, you can trade. Okay, 8 seconds. 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All right. It's over. Trading is over. Shh. Go back to your seats. Huh? Yeah, you keep it. That's yours. That's my gift to you. Depending on how you view life, approximately 90% of the decisions you make every day are value-based decisions. If you didn't read your Bible and pray this morning, it's because you gave up something for that. If you watched TV last night and slept late, it's an exchange of values. Life is always about an exchange of values. And the reason why that is so is because values is rooted in God. That's where we get the word worship. Worship is actually worth-ship. It's about worth. The reason why our life is value-based is because that's how God would have it. God, who is most valuable, valued us, in which case he sent us that which is most valuable to him, who is his son. And that's the reason why everything we do, practically everything you do, is based on values. And the sooner you come to the conclusion, in fact, you may not even be aware of it, but when you eat in a certain restaurant, it's a value-based decision. What you used to your time with, if you valued sleeping more than exercising, if you valued whatever it is you're doing, is an exchange of values. The other thing that's amazing about values is values are so important and they change. What's valuable today may not be as valuable tomorrow in the different seasons of people's time. That's why we as leaders
need to understand how values work. For instance, a jug of water today is not as important or valuable if I found myself in the Sahara Desert with no water. An iPod will be more valuable than this water today, but if I were in the Sahara Desert, an iPod is useless, especially if it doesn't have any batteries on it. And all of a sudden, this is what's more valuable to me. And so training yourself to think in terms of values is such a critical component of leadership. In fact, many decisions that you're going to make, both personal and as a leader, and as a minister or a pastor or as administrator, are value-based decisions. And that's what I'm hoping to walk you through. The amount of time I was in the hospital last night because my sister is undergoing surgery at noon today. And the truth of the matter is I was kind of exhausted because I was in a conference at the Shangri-La in the morning. I had to be there by 7:30. And then I had to be here for the pastor's conference. And I had to host the speaker yesterday and a host of other things that I do at my office upstairs. I had to go home and had a chat with Jackie Sue. I was exhausted. But because my sister is valuable to me, I had to stay in the hospital and make sure that that happens. In which case, I had to forgo certain things. There are certain things that I didn't do last night because something was a value decision that I had to make. Does that make sense? So I'm framing this in such a way where you can understand that at the end of the day, a leader has created scales in his heart and his mind to be able to weigh, and the sooner that discipline comes, the Bible says dishonest scales is detestable to God. So the more honest your scales are, the more discerning you are in terms of what's valuable and the values that they play at that time and season and moment is critical in the way you lead and make decisions. In the book of Matthew chapter 6 verse 19, we find Jesus explaining the six universal values that we face. It's probably the most important grid that you're going to have. When I present values, I explain this in three different levels. I present this differently to the pastors, and I'm presenting this to you in a very different way, and I'm probably going to present this more in a different, more like a workshop with the senior pastors of how do you make decisions based on this grid. And we're probably going to do some of that exercise this morning. But I want to walk you through how values work and what the universal values that God has ingrained in our hearts are. Matthew chapter 6, verse 19, it says, "Do not store for yourselves values on earth or treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy or where thieves break in and steal. But store for yourselves treasures in heaven where moth and rust destroy or where thieves break in, do not break in and steal." And I was sharing this with the pastors, the second tier of pastors, has explained that to say that you cannot take everything with you is really not a completely correct statement. To say that there are certain things that you cannot take with you is not completely true, because as we're reading in this verse, Jesus does say that there are some things you can take with you, because he's saying you can actually store things in heaven. So the big question is, what is that? Now, Jesus said in Luke chapter 16 that that is actually people. He says, use worldly values or worldly wealth to gain friends so that they will welcome you in eternal dwellings. In other words, the thing that is of value to God or the highest value to God is people. And that's the whole tension of the difference between value and need. Or in other words, value is really defined in two equal things, which is need and desire. In other words, what's valuable to people is something they need and something they want. Right? I mean, when you got this, it's a decision of whether I need this or do I want this. Now, those are equals, but one is a little bit slightly higher in the world of equals. In other words, desire is obviously, in many ways, a few notches higher than need. For instance, my wife will save on dishwashing detergent to be able to buy a nice handbag. Hello. Because that's a desire versus a need. For instance, there will be things that you're going to be giving up out of a need, but you're going to do something because you desire it, because you want it. And so God did not need us, he wanted us. So in other words, the desirability level, the value, our value does not come out of a need, but out of a want, out of a desire, out of a passion. Okay, now in verse 21 it says, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Why is value so important? Because it's a heart issue. Where your treasure is, where your values is, whatever you value, that's where your heart is. That's why it's critical that we understand clearly what's valuable, because at the end of the day, that's where your decisions are going to be based. That's the weight that you're going to put into it. Interestingly, many times when you speak of leadership, a lot of people talk about vision. But what I want to make clear to you this morning is that values come before vision. And here in verse 22, Jesus makes it clear that what you see, or the lamp, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are good, your whole body will be full of light. In other words, before you can even see vision, before you can ever enter into a place of defining vision, you've got to first define your values. Because your values will really, in many ways, determine how you look at life. In other words, the vision is seeing ahead of you, a picture of the future. But what you see is greatly influenced by what you value. Does that make sense? And when you look at the things that you chose this morning and how you chose them, those are value-based. Is that correct? It's already 9:18. Am I done? I've got 2 minutes to go. How does this work? Where did I start? Oh, okay. Sorry. I go till 10 o'clock. But if your eyes are bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light is within you, your darkness is great. How great is your darkness? Now here Jesus explains to us the six universal values that we have. He says, no one can serve two masters. Either he will hate one or love the other, or he will be devoted to one or despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Now in your next sheet there, you find two sets of three circles. And I want you to write in the first top circle, God and money. These are the two top values that he's saying. In many ways, they equal to it. Let me give you a very quick history of money and why Jesus uses it as a reference to God. In the book of Exodus, there were multiple gods that God judged in Egypt. Remember, there was the God of the Nile, there was the God of fertility, there was the God of beauty, there was the living God, Pharaoh. There was all kinds of gods that he had to judge, the God of health, the God of productivity, etc. Now, in those days, there was no money. The norm was barter and trade. In other words, the way I got things across was I trade your pineapples for my papyrus. I don't know if there were pineapples at the time. I don't think there were. The trade was between things that you had and things that I didn't have. Okay. Now remember, in the time of Joseph, there was money, but they were in limited supply. They were only one of the commodities that was used to do trade. Now it was not until about 2,500 years ago when coinage was invented, and they had the technology to stamp and replicate coins. And that began the idea of trading by using money. You following? Now, it was not until the Greeks took over the world that when they took over the world, they literally fashioned or shaped society and civilization with the use of money. In other words, you can now become a teacher and doesn't have to be a farmer, but with the use of money, I can now buy a piece of that and a piece of that, and I can buy clothes from you. I can now be a specialist and not just be a farmer that does everything. That's one reason why money works. The second reason why it works is because if I were taking care of cows and you were taking care of vegetables and I only need 2 kilos of your vegetables, I can't give you my entire cow for your 2 kilos of vegetables. I'm going to have to trade you 2 pieces of the hoofs of my cow, in which case I lose the value of my cow. Because my cow can actually reproduce itself, but with the use of money, I can trade with you. Got it? Now, by the time the Romans took over the world, in the book of Revelation, it says, no longer can anyone do any trade apart from the seal. And the Romans managed to create currencies, gold, silver, and bronze, which is now allows you to have wider trade. And Jesus steps into the scene and says, from this day forward, there is only one God, money. Because for all intents and purposes, if you had money, you could do just about everything that the gods of the Nile could do. You could provide for yourself. You could provide for beauty. You could do just about anything now. And that's why Jesus is saying it's that and that. Those are the two top echelon of values. So you're having to deal with top-line values and second-line values. Everybody following? Then he goes on to say in verse 25, therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life. Put that life in the next box here. It says, and what you will eat, or do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is life more valuable than food, or your body more valuable than clothes? So here you find the six universal values. You find that what Jesus is saying is that you've got money, life, and body is more valuable than money, food, and clothes. Sadly, in many places, people value money more than God. In many instances, people value food more than life. Hello. In many cases, we value the things we wear more than our health, our bodies. And one of the things you'll find increasingly when you deal with values is you cannot have dichotomies. You can dichotomize them when you define them, but in real life and in real practice, they actually move together. For instance, I hit two values this morning by exercising and praying. How many of you know I hit the God value and I hit the body value? And I probably hit some of my work value by being here on time. Because I can't separate that. It's very similar to your blood. You can define your blood as red blood cells, white blood cells, and platelets. But you cannot really function without one. They actually work together. Let me give you an example. You did come here with your bodies, right? In other words, when we dichotomize and say, no, this is all Jesus, 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 Jesus. Yeah, but Jesus is also Lord of your body. All right. When you hyper-spiritualize things and you say, this is the problem. We had this problem back about 8 years ago where we had people who came to office and then they would take a break at 10 in the morning to do their small group. And say, wait a minute. We're paying you to work here. Okay? We're not paying you to do small group. You're supposed to do small group like everybody else after your work. There's a confusion in values. Okay, they're not clear about the values. Does that make sense? Now, the danger here is you can't have one without the other. When we define God, obviously we all know who God is. He is ultimately the greatest value. But the next one it says is life, and I think it's in the next one, but here it says, and I'm going to land this, and I'm going to get into practical explanations here. Verse 26, look at the birds of the air. They neither sow nor reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? So clearly, this is what this discussion is about. This is a discussion on values. And that's how values work. We are valuable not because we're valuable. We're valuable because God who values us is valuable. It's like art. It's like stocks and bonds. It's like currencies. The values of these things do not go up mainly because of the inherent value. The value goes up because of the people who value them. Okay? In other words, if you buy a piece of art and you look at it and think, I wouldn't even buy that. And all of a sudden, Fernando Zobel steps in and I will pay $1 million for that. All of a sudden, that thing has value. Okay? It's very similar to a piece of property. When you pick up mud in Fort Bonifacio and mud in Caloocan, they're both mud. But the desirability and the people who desire the mud here, get it. Okay? So value increases depending on which brings us to a very important word. And that, or two words actually, about values. And that word is called market forces. Because market forces will make decisions not based on your values, but on their values. In other words, when you went to your little marketplace, you were holding values. And now you're going to have to trade those values. From a personal standpoint, there's a labor market. And your viability in that market is dependent on the values you bring in. The danger is when an organization does not work in terms of understanding values, and so now you're paying people who are not contributing value. Yesterday we were here with Alex Castillo, and he was explaining the importance of this thing. How as you propagate and get longer, and you realize you're paying people certain values, but they're not contributing to the overall value. You're quiet this morning. Okay? In other words, this has an implication on my values. I've got to make sure that I'm continually increasing my values. Now, here's the reason why this is important. Life is defined as your relationship. Right? When you think about life, why is it the next of value? It's because there are no spare parts to your body. There's a great verse in the book of Ecclesiastes that says it's better to have a dead dog or a dead goat than to have a living lion. There's no point in having a lion if it's dead. I'd rather have a bird that's alive than having a lion that's dead. Because at the end of the day, life is what's valuable. And those are your relationships. If your house was on fire, the first thing, you know, I just read the newspaper this morning where it says that this girl was texting her mother from the rubble in New Zealand. She's a Filipina and saying, "Mom, we're trapped underneath all of this." Okay. And it makes the headlines. I mean, you push this back a few years ago where she was probably a domestic helper there, it probably doesn't matter. But now all of a sudden, because her life is in danger, she makes the headlines. Hello. Because how many of you know when there's a life and death situation, we're all listening? Because that's valuable. When the two towers in the World Trade Center was crumbling, people were leaving stocks and bonds. Okay, they were leaving their laptops. There's no value there compared to my life. And so here was what differentiates Christians from non-Christians, because in the non-Christian world, this is the top line value. In a Christian organization, your values are number one, God, number two are my relationships. And thirdly, and then here's the funny thing, is if you have, why you can't dichotomize that, if you have God and relationships but without your body or your health, then what you have is an unsustainable situation. And so when I run an organization, whether that's in the secular, commercial, I try to make sure, and Gans, you've worked here, the norm for me is when I see somebody in the office past 5 o'clock, that means we're not doing good. Because that means that's not healthy. That means that's not sustainable. And that doesn't mean time, okay? It could be that you start at 10 and you end at 6 or 7 or 8. My point is, you're looking at the health condition of your people because you know they're not going to last. So I'm constantly managing that. I'm constantly looking at that value and making sure. And that's one of the reasons why, at least in the context of the fort, and this may not be your context because depending on your given situation, I'm demanding people to come on time for the simple reason I want them all to leave on time. I'm not wanting them to come on time because I'm corporate. I'm wanting them to come on time because I want them to deliver their values and so that they can go home to what's ultimately most valuable to them. Because I know that if I meet those values, their productivities will go up. It's a values world. Paolo Punsalan values his wife and children more than I value that, and my job is not to value that. My value, I understand his values, and I create an atmosphere where he delivers and we get our values as he experiences his values. Got it? And so this is how you make a decision. I got a letter from a longtime member of our church. This is a values decision. And she's been a member of this church for more than 20 years, and this has actually implications with you. And she's the girl who supplies us with envelopes. offering envelopes. And now what's happened, I think, if I read this right, the cost of her envelopes are a lot higher than the new suppliers. Now, pushback 20 years ago, she was giving us value. Pushback 20 years later, her values are no longer the values because the volume of envelopes we produce or need is a lot higher, in which case we can find a cheaper supplier, probably for a higher quality. How are you going to decide that now? She's relationally important, but from an overall standpoint, what do I do? How do I tell her that, wait, your price is double the envelopes, and if you multiply that by the number of envelopes the organization prints now, we are now guilty of losing value. Right? So if you were to make that decision, how are you going to make that decision? Adea, how would you make that decision? Using this grid. Because remember, let me finish this first, okay? If you have that and that without that, you're unhealthy. If you have God and healthy without life, you're rigid. Many, many organizations are very rigid. It's like, do this, do that. Yeah, but you know, people are not enjoying themselves. Or if you have your health and your life without God, then you're ungodly, which we don't want either. In other words, you can't have not all of these functioning together. The key to leadership is having a value scale that you can actually discern and spot something and say, okay, for this season and moment, and some of these is going to be exercise, but when you're aware of it, you learn through the constant use of the exercise. Now, back to my question, how would you decide this thing? This is a good friend, longtime church member, served us very well, and now she's saying, I'm a single mom, I'm old, okay? This is a value-based decision here. If you don't understand values, you're going to make a decision either for the good of the organization, which is to cut her, for her bad, okay? Or you're going to make a decision for her good, which is for our bad. But you're the leader. You're the one who's going to make the decision. Jay, how would you do that? Yep. Microphone.
I think we can allocate other supplies to her, like locally, there are other churches that get small amounts. So allocate the supplies, but churches that have bigger requirements.
Great. That's a good thought. Anybody?
For me, siguro to initiate communication and sabihin sa kanya yung ano, tell her the situation. We have a new supplier coming in. Lower price, tapos with her, then ask her, can you lower your price with the same quality? Something like, but not to cut her that without even telling her na we have a new supplier coming in.
You should be the general manager.
Okay.
Anybody else? Any other thoughts? Yes.
Hello. All right. We actually heard about it in Alabang. And we had to. I didn't make the decision. I'm glad of that. But if you were to ask me, I'd actually, because we're into, for me personally, if I was to choose, I'm more into relationship.
Yeah.
I'd stick with her because I value that. She served us well. She served us well. Every time I call her, she's just amazing. And so yeah. That for me is more of value. But that's my decision, not my pastor's decision. And so I still believe that if it's money, I think the value that we believe, me personally, I think we can earn it later on. So For me, it's more of a relationship now.
Ado?
I'll negotiate with her because she also has her sets of values that that doesn't mean the amount is not negotiable. So based on her values, she can make she can probably lower her price and equal
probably
that of the other
more.
Supplier.
Yeah. Let me explain why you need to think in terms of values. Because, and you, why you cannot just say relationships. Because if you make that decision, and then you're going to have members of the church and find out that you're paying more money to one person, you're going to lose the relationships with the people in your church. So you're really not talking about values, you're playing favorites. And that's the difference between what they call free market forces. That's why it's called free market forces, because people are free to make a decision based on values. The opposite of free market forces is forced market forces. That's communism. In many ways, that's the church, where you impose and insist on your values and people don't see the value. It's like building a house that you think is the most beautiful house, but nobody wants to live in it. So in other words, regardless of how much you spent and how much labor you put in, if that has no value to me, I'm not getting that. Because at the end of the day, people will make a decision based on values. Churches are not growing around the city because people don't value them. If you study the statistics on churches worldwide, it is on a steep decline. It's because we're insisting on forced market values. This is the Bible. Here's what we say. It's the RH bill. We're doing what we're not. That's not where they are. And as the world switches to secular, it'll be more free market. The reason why the Middle East is having trouble right now is because they've had it with forced markets. And increasingly, there's going to be a switch because people are now being more educated and they're being realized there are options. And rightfully so. Because that is of greater value to me. Yesterday, in our discussion here, Alex Castillo talked about how Del Monte controlled, was it 95%? 98% of the tomato-based market. By the time they were all said and done, Del Monte controlled 98% of the tomato market. There's nowhere else to expand. There's nothing. Hunt's was 2%. In other words, 98% was Del Monte. So they thought. And then they realized that's 98% of the tomato market. But what about the non-tomato market? What about the adobo market? What about the dinuguan market? Are we thinking about that? And how do I get the adobo market, the dinuguan market? It's called kitchenomics. By creating a line of menus that make put value in my tomato paste. And not settling and saying, okay, I already have this. No, no, it's increasing value because every time you don't increase value, you're hurting yourself. For instance, in that decision, if I make a decision for her, the long-term effect of that is I'm hurting myself. I'm hurting the whole organization because I'm decreasing value. You care to answer that? Sure, please.
It's just that sometimes it feels like and it's an emotional decision. I do agree that we can always talk to her and you know, ask for a cheaper price and stuff. And that's it. But I also, for me, deeply, it's more of finding a way. We can always find a way of making it easier, lighter. But if you were to choose to totally cut her off, because then again, when you say, tell her, it's not black and white. For me, it's either black or white, Pastor Joey. And for me to able to make a decision whether it's black or white makes me assure that I can stand firm on my decision. I know that there will be repercussions in the end, wherein there it's gonna be like it's gonna be difficult. Like I'm gonna affect all that whatever. It's just that. You asked me to make a decision, and that's what I did. So I don't know. It
all your decisions will have repercussions, by the way. And that's why if you are decreasing the value of an organization, then you are no longer of value. And it's not because of me. It's because as the organization decreases in value, the free market forces will switch to another value. In other words, an organization that does not keep increasing value will lose values, not because you can't force the market. The market will always make a decision based on values. The reason why people are coming to church is because they find value in coming to church. If you think that the reason why they're coming to church is because you're holding a leather book that says God is going to punish them, you're going to make a big mistake, because as the world shifts into value-based markets, they're not coming. They will not come. And if you think this way and you decrease values, what's going to happen is the new people who say, I have a better value to improve, they're not going to come to your church if that's the decision you're going to make. If I'm a printer and I can reduce the value and better and use some of that money to be able to hire more staff, to be able to deliver more values to the people who come to the church, but you said, no, I'd rather spend it because I've got a relationship with this person, you're already making the wrong decision. Because you're already making a decision based on, you're making an emotional decision. You're not making a decision based on value. Now, I'm not saying I'm going to cut her off, but what I'm trying to tell you is you've got to create value. And you're probably doing a disservice to her because you're teaching her and her staff and her son who co-runs the business with her that you can be sloppy and you're not, and she will never have another market. She will never improve. But if she learns how to create value, she probably will open other markets. But because of the decision you made, she probably will never become valuable. Anybody care to comment? Hello. It's like you guys... Are you here?
Pastor Joey, I would probably do what Edwin will do, but I won't cut her off immediately. I'll probably give her a chance, make it within three months, like, you know, have the varied suppliers. I know it's management practices is like just go centralized and one supplier, but maybe like ease her out little by little and see what other products, help her and say, you know, you can offer these other products. What do you think? Do you think you can develop it? Give her time also, because she served us 20 years, but you give her time to ease out. And in the end, she will see that the other supplier really does pay us service also. So as a member of our church, she will also want that for us anyway. But I guess the abruptness is what kind of frightened her. So if we help her ease out and transition, then I think we'll have a win-win. Win for us and win for her, right, and her son.
In other words, now you're meeting values. You're keeping the relationship. You're sitting down with her, but you're not protecting her or forcing the entire operation to say, we're forcing you to take this value regardless of whether it's a substandard value. By the way, that's communism. That's what Mikhail Gorbachev and Deng Xiaoping realized in time and said, we've got to shift this or our nations will not be here. Because if you don't increase in value and force people for your values, it's just a matter of time before you have nothing. Yep.
I agree with, valuing the person and the relationship, but I think one thing we also have to keep in mind is that, I've seen a tendency in a lot of churches where they compromise quality and excellence just because, well, he's a brother, she's a sister, and so they'll take a substandard service or product just on the basis of, oh, well, he's a believer. And, you know, because I always think from a real life perspective, I'm accountable to every donor, every person who gives to my organization. And I am a donor, and I have been a donor to other organizations. And so I would want them to treat my funds the same way that, you know, that I treat other people's funds. And so I think to go back to Dexter, you know, one way that you might be able to help the relationship and help the woman feel valued is to, I wouldn't say, well, you know, let's give you time, because it's still, a, like you said, a substandard service to the organization if you're paying double what you should be paying. But I think what you could do in a case like Victory, where we've got extensive connections, is you could say, well, you know, let me see if I can help you find, you know, cheaper paper suppliers so that you can produce cheaper envelopes and help her, you know, bring in, you know, maybe it's a mom and pop organization. Maybe you can bring in, you know, your connections, business people you know, to help her run her business more efficiently, because there's a reason why her envelopes are twice as much as other people's envelopes. And, you know, some of it could just be the volume. But, I mean, that way at least you, she sees that you really value the relationship. You're not just saying, like, well, hey, you know, you're too expensive, we're cutting you off. But at the same time, you know, you can help her to understand, you know, we're accountable to, you know, all of our donors. We're accountable to every member of this church. And, you know, we have to make, the responsible decision for our organization. But we want to help you. And we, you know, we want the best for you as well.
There are values are based on certain expectations that people have. Because what you're weighing here is the whole essence of, I care about this person, which I do. I really do. In fact, I've been praying for her. Because at the end of the day, she's not going to hear this from anybody but me. And that's why she wrote me. Okay. But am I going to make that decision on the basis of her value without this? I don't think I can do that. Because that would be unfair to all of you. And yet, I'm the one who's probably closest to her. And I'm probably the one who knows the entire situation. Yeah. But what I'm trying to make you understand is you're going to face situations like this. And that's one of the problems with churches. You've got people who care a lot, but they're not competent. They don't know how to make decisions. It's kind of like you have a pilot who cares, but he doesn't know how to land the plane. You don't want that. You don't want people like that in the organization. You want them in church, but you don't want them working for you. Because if they can't land the plane, I don't care how much he cares for me. I want to make, in fact, I'd care more that he knows how to land the plane even if he didn't care for me. There are times and places when you're looking for competence more than just somebody who has a good heart. And by the way, as a Christian organization, the expectation is everybody should have a good heart. Does that make sense? Yeah.
I just want to say that I'm really appreciative that we get to talk and really things like this, because it's more than just a class, which is one way. And what I was trying to, maybe not to explain myself, but really for me, it's being able for all of us to make a decision. And sometimes we have to make. I agree with you, Pastor Joey, that we will have to make tough decisions. And whether it's the values of whether we have certain values of some things and other things. I guess for me, my only point of view is that I was able to decide something. And maybe I want to encourage everyone in the class to have something like that. And just like what you mentioned.
Let me explain now the second line of values. See, very often, particularly in Christian organizations, we look at that and say, wow, I agree with that. Sometimes in Christian organizations, as long as I have that and that, forget that. And let me just tell you something. I don't care how spiritual you are. If something goes wrong with your health, it's hard to be spiritual. It really is. You better take care of that body, because, by the way, there's only one of that. There are no spare parts there. Okay? That's very valuable. A lot of what you're going to be doing with that body. Okay? you're sleeping, you're eating, a lot of what you're going to be doing, you're going to be using that bud. Okay? So you better take care of that and understand that's valuable. You can't sustain this organization. In fact, in my opinion, one of the greatest threats of this to this organization is when some of your key people are living a very unhealthy life. But why are you so quiet with me? I mean, this is supposed to be a good message. I mean, But see, people don't think this way. And by the way, if you don't this way, you're probably going to have a hard time understanding why senior leaders make decisions, because you won't be able to trace it, because a lot of these are scales, they're increments, they vary from day to day. You cannot formulate this is learned through practice every day of your life, where I forgo certain things because this is more valuable than that. It's actually a discipline. It gets to the place where you look at one thing and say, that does not have value. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to make a decision. That doesn't mean you're going to just cut this woman out. That means I'm going to have to navigate that and figure out a way to be able to arrive at that decision without hurting the relationship, because the relationship is still valuable. But to say that I will protect staff who's not performing, I'm not doing that. I'm firing the guy. Hello? Why? Because if you're going to want to keep this organization 50 years from now and your culture is protectionist, that's why this country is where it is. It's the crony. It's this guy. The guy has no value. He doesn't contribute to anything. He's not increasing the value, but we're keeping him because he's been here the longest. Ouch. And that goes for me. Please do not keep me here if I'm not adding value. Please. But if I'm 85 years old and I'm adding value, make me stay. Because that's what it's about. Okay, let's look at this. I've got 5 minutes to do this. Money, food, and clothes. What do you find in a mall? What? Why is everybody in the mall? Where is that? Where is that there? What does food represent? People, things that people what? Want and what? Enjoy. What do people keep buying? Why do they buy the clothes, the watches, the shoes? Things that are excellent. What will keep you in business? Economics, excellence, and enjoy. When people, if the money factor works, what are value meals? The right price for the right value, because I enjoy it, it fulfills me, it meets the value. Then we have a transaction. I like your vitamins because I prefer that with a cup of coffee. And to her, the cup of coffee is more important than the vitamins. Because to her, that cup of coffee means a moment that I can trade half of that frappuccino and split that between my child and I, and we're sitting there and we're fellowshipping and there's a value there. In other words, these are values. It's a values-driven world. If you don't think like this, you're not going to go very far. Not even in your own career. And if the organization does not create values, it's just a matter of time before that organization disappears. Because the market forces are very strong. And they're the ones who are going to decide, not you and me. So if you have one-to-one, but you fail to make them understand the value of one-to-one to them, ain't going to connect. They're not going through one-to-one with you. Got it? Economics. Let me explain this to you. Some people, particularly in Christian circles, keep saying, this is not about money, okay? Let's go there. Let me cut your salary tomorrow. And go home and tell your wife, your kids are not going to have education anymore. Let me see how spiritual you'll be in the next 10 days. We keep saying these things. We don't understand what we're talking about. Money is about values. It's a currency of exchange. It's not about money. It's the fourth value, but it has value. In other words, if you're adding value, rightfully so, you should be paid more. Right? You're quiet. No, I'm for communism. Equal rights, equal pay. You know what you're going to do there, right? You're going to reduce the value. You know why Christianity does not believe that? It's because Christianity experimented on that. That was the first experiment of the pilgrims. It doesn't work. We're going to get to that in session two. But let me summarize this. I've got 2 minutes to do this. Economics, enjoy, and excellence. If you've got economics and enjoy, without excellence, you've got mediocrity. If you got economics and excellence without enjoy, you got burnout. If you've got enjoy and excellence without economics, you got poverty and lack. They work together. What stays in the mall? The thing that runs the economic engine. And the reason why it runs the economic engine is because time zone is enjoyable and people are willing to pay their values for it. And it's excellent. That's why it's going to stay there. The day you lose the excellence, people will lose the enjoy and they'll stop paying and you're going to lose the economics. It's just a matter of time. It's not because Joey said so. It's because the market forces say so. Okay? People will go where it's excellent. People will go where the economics works. People will go where they enjoy themselves. What's the implication of that to pastor? Don't burn out your volunteers. Okay? They're not going to be there. You know what I like about church? It's a flat rate. It's 10% across the board. It's just now a question of who is good at managing values and creating value. Boy, you're really quiet. You understand you have to make all of this work. If you think that this is just going to work, if you think the money grows on trees, it doesn't. Now, that does not negate the fact that God provides. And part of that provision is the wisdom to understand that this is how it works. That's a part of the provision. Hello. You look like you're... How many of you have ever read Adam Smith? Paul, you've read Adam Smith. That's basic economics. Economics 101. Gigi, I'm sure you did. I mean, this is basic. These are market forces. I can't change this. You can't change this. No one can. Okay, I'll walk you through the next layer of this, but explain how we're going to mesh this all together and transform it into a vision. All right? 15 seconds. Am I on time?